It is a Getaway Friday morning, Friday, March the 3rd, 2023. 3-3-23. How about that date? 15 coming up on 16 minutes past the hour. You are tuned in to Over the Back Fence here on WGH Talk with Scott Spears and Pastor Steve Whitaker from Community Christian Fellowship. And I believe we're going to be joined by Pastor Whitaker here momentarily. Pastor Whitaker, how are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Good to hear from you. How are things?
Oh, they're better. Getting a little bit better. It's been a couple days out of commission last week, but things are getting a lot better. How are you, Scott?
Doing well. I tell you, we had a great guest in our first hour this morning. The big Marian Noon Kiwanis Pancake Day is coming up on March the 11th, so a week from tomorrow at Tri Rivers. And, boy, that event's been going on for 64 years. It's quite amazing.
That is amazing. And don't they have they do a lot of stuff there. I think they do a charity food drive for that, if I'm not mistaken, where people bring in, when they come for pancakes, they also bring in a food item. Am I right? I believe so.
I believe they do that. I know they have a gift basket drawing, and they also partner up with FFA and the Key Club here in Marion, which are younger people service groups, and they help serve the food that morning. So it's a really, really great event.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it's kind of funny. We were talking a couple weeks ago about civic organizations and the fact that not many people are, you know, getting involved to the point they were. And, you know, I got to thinking about that. A lot of times things we talk about, I'll think about later. And you know, really, when I think about it, I think that we are getting pretty much still involved, but it's just a different involved. I think we're seeing a lot more grassroots organizations versus the Lions and the Knights of the Pythias and those kind of things. But we're seeing a lot of grassroots groups that are clubs or service organizations of some point. What do you think about that, Scott?
I think that's probably right. And one thing about this event, which has been going on 64 years, so since the late 1960s, it continues to go on. It continues to draw a huge crowd between 7 a.m. and 2 p.m., and I think one of the reasons for that is it's fun. There are certain things that service groups have to do. I mean, they have to have meetings. They have to check the books. They have to vote on things, and that sometimes can be tedious. But if you offer something fun that people can participate in and enjoy, which is what I think service groups used to do, all service groups used to have a bowling team. You don't see much of that anymore.
No, not at all. And they would have softball teams in the summer.
Yeah.
They had those. You know, I know that here in Prospect, we have the 4th of July celebration every year where there's, you know, games and all kinds of things going on. And of course, there's the fireworks and food and the chickens are cooked. But, you know, that's a combined effort of the Lions and the Prospect Fire Department. And that is a thing that people can do that's a lot of fun, but it takes a lot of organization, and it takes a lot of stuff behind the scenes to even make it happen. And so I think that you know, there's things out there. One thing that I might mention, on February, what is it, this coming Thursday, whatever this coming Thursday is, Children's Services in Marion County is holding an open house, and for people to come in and see what they can do to volunteer and get involved. And you know, there's two places right here in Marion that are service organizations that are faith-based. Be the Village and Royal Family Kids. And they work with those kids and children's services. But you know, there's a lot of groups like that, and people just, I just really don't think that they're quite aware of them. But I think too, when you look at some of the older established ones that have been around for many, many, many years, and I'm not talking about the pancake thing, obviously, but you know, some of your clubs, I think that people they're limited enough, and some of the members are old enough now, that if you get involved, you're going to get put to work. And I'm not sure we're in a time when people really want to be put to work when they join something.
You know, it's interesting. After we had the conversation about service groups a couple weeks ago, one thing that sprung to my mind that we did not talk about was there used to be drives in which the current members would try to go out and sign people up to become members of the group. Now, sometimes they're successful and sometimes they're not, but I don't know that that happens so much anymore. I think maybe because of the technology age, maybe because we don't see each other as often as we used to, we don't do those. Hey, you know, why don't you come and sit in on a meeting, and if you want to join, then we'll sign you up. I don't know if that happens so much anymore.
You know, I don't think so either. You know, part of it is I think people are, our society is just so different, Scott. We have a little bit of leeriness about new people and who they are. We don't want to ever overstep our bounds and invite someone to something and then do a background check and find out that we just signed up Jack the Ripper. I know I say that tongue in cheek, but I think there's a little bit of that type of fear out there today. People are much better off, in their mind, a lot of times, just bringing in a family member or a friend or a coworker or somebody they actually know.
You know, this was a conversation I had with somebody this week. Does it matter? Obviously not Jack the Ripper, but if somebody has a, you know, bit of a reputation or a tainted past, as long as they're past that, I mean, I guess we never really know, but as long as we think they're past it and they're living a productive life, is it terrible to invite them into a faith-based or a non-faith-based service organization?
Oh, no, you better.
Yeah.
It just depends on what it is, you know. If people, I'll give you an example. If people are have a past where they've maybe been a problem with children, you know, maybe a sex offender, that's different. I think you can invite them into the church, but you don't invite them into, depending on what the group is, they can't work with kids. And the same thing you've got to look for. There's a lot of oddness out there today, but, you know, I think you're right. I mean, we better. I mean, Jesus, that's all he taught was forgiveness, love and forgiveness, and we better. I know that here at church, I jokingly sometimes refer to people here at church as we are the church of misfit toys. And what I mean by that is everyone here comes from such a varied background. And so many people did have maybe a wild youth or that kind of thing. But they're past that, and they grow past that, and they actually mature, and some of them are better off almost for it, you know what I mean?
Well, I do know what you mean, and this is a bit of a delicate subject, but I think that it's delicate because we don't discuss it. But, you know, you brought it up there. It's the world we live in. There are people who are registered sex offenders who are out of prison, who are back in society. How do we acclimate those people back into society when everybody knows where they live, everybody knows when they move into your neighborhood, everybody knows their record if they go apply for a job? I mean, it's almost as if we don't want them to be productive.
Well, it's very hard. Probably there's such a high rate when it comes to being a sexual offender as far as like a tier 3 especially, there is such a rate of recidivism that people are afraid. And you have to be careful. I mean, it's just like here at the church. We have to protect our kids here at church. We have to protect the flock. We have to really protect, you know. Unfortunately today, you know, if someone in our church were to go out and commit some heinous act, and it was shown that they had that problem in the past, man, the news media would be all over it. Our doors might as well shut. And, you know, so I think that, you know, I think that we have to exercise judgment. We have to exercise restraint sometimes in how we present things and how we report things. And I also think that we have to exercise good judgment at the same time. But, you know, there's stuff that is legal that people do every day. I'll give you a good example. to be somebody that likes to spend their summers at a nudist camp, okay, or a or is it what they would call an exhibitionist. Now, would you be a little leery to have them in charge of a children's program at the church?
Well, and I think that's the interesting point. When I think about it, of course nobody's saying that sex offenders, that's okay and they should not be in prison. But, you know, I think about drug dealers who are imprisoned. I think about people who have domestic violence, assault and battery, who go to prison for that. And as bad as those are, they're not, you don't know if they're in your neighborhood. You don't see that turned away. You almost see that invited in a way. You know, you've turned your life around is what they'll say. With sex offenders, you don't really see that.
Well, I'll tell you, and it's interesting that you say that. If I just recently took a short course in child protection, which for all the things I'm involved in, it seems like I'm constantly taking one of those. I have to do like four or five background checks a year with different organizations I belong to, and they all want their own independent one. They don't want you to share with you. You know what I mean? But anyway, I just did this one, and it was very interesting statistic that really kind of surprised me. It said that, you know, of course we do background checks before we let people work with kids, certainly. But do you know the average person, the average sex offender commits 40 acts before they're caught the first time? So you may have somebody that is clean as a bell, clear as a bell on the National Registry of Sex Offenders, and never been reported, but has been out there doing this. So it goes beyond just that registry, and I don't think that registry always tells the whole story either. I've known, you know, if you go back to our parents' day and age, in our parents' day and age, and in your grandparents' day and age, for a 18-year-old to marry a 15-year-old was pretty common type thing. Today, for an 18-year-old to be caught with a 14-year-old, they'd be on a National Sex Offender Registry. So, you know, where are we at with that?
Well, and you know, I on our news this morning, there's a story running on the news here in Marion that a 38-year-old male was found to be dealing in some kind of, I believe it was child pornography on the internet. Now, I believe this is the first time this person has been caught. I don't know what their affiliation is. I don't know if they go to a church. I don't know what their job is. I don't know anything of that nature. Their name's out there now. We know that they're 38 years old, but clearly they were doing this, and prior to this, they had not been caught and were around people.
Yes, and see, that's the whole point. You know, the thing about child abuse in that way is this, that for one, I think you got to kind of have a pretty demented, twisted mind to go down that road. And the thing is, if somebody, domestic abuse can come out of anger issues and the heat of passion, right? Grand larceny, something like that, can come out of a situation where people, you know, they just don't feel they can get ahead any other way than to steal, I suppose. But those are things that are, I won't say they're acceptable crimes, but they're crimes that need paid for, but people can be rehabilitated from. I don't think most people feel that sex offenders can be rehabilitated, especially young child sex offenders. And whether they can or they can't, most people think that they can't. And I think that part of the thing that really red flags all this is that children are so vulnerable, and they're so young, and they're so innocent, and they can be manipulated so easily that it's not the same as you know, two adults going toe-to-toe. Does that make any sense?
Well, it is, because it does make a lot of sense, and the interesting thing of it is that, You know, I don't know. It's very difficult in a way because, as I say, certainly nobody condones it. Certainly nobody thinks it's okay. But I also don't think that we think hitting your wife is okay.
No,
I don't,
no, no.
I don't think that we think that dealing drugs to children is okay.
No.
But yet we don't look at sex offenders that way. I've never heard anybody go to a sex offender and say, boy, it's great that they turned their life around. But we do that with drug dealers. We do that with people who batter their wives.
I think it goes back to the Scott that I think that people believe that that problem is so deeply rooted and they're so demented in their mind that they don't think they can turn, they don't trust them. They don't think they can turn their life around. And I've got a friend that had a, was associate pastor at a church on Neal Avenue in Columbus, and a rather large church at the time, but you know, it had dwindled in attendance. It was right down off campus just a little bit. And he had a burden for these people, he really did. And as the church got to the point where it wasn't going to be supported as a church so much, he ended up getting the building and opening it up to a church and a mission center for sex offenders. And he's had several rental properties down in the campus area, and he would give these guys housing. They would have a church or a core group there, a support group, and they were all registered sex offenders. And it gave them some place to go and an outlet to worship without the fear of judgment.
Well, and I think the real underlying issue is, with this whole thing, is if we are going to let people out of prison, and we're going to say be productive, and we're going to criticize people for getting on programs such as welfare and food card and Medicaid, I really don't know how a sex offender gets housing. I don't know how they live in a neighborhood. I don't know how they get a job. I'm not really sure when they're turned out of prison, because in most cases, it's not a lifetime sentence. I'm not sure exactly how they're supposed to live in society.
Well, I know there was a... Am I right, Scott? Was there a bill recently trying to be introduced just maybe a year ago that when people applied for a job, they would not have to put if they'd been in prison or not? Because it always was asked. They were taking that off of the job form.
I think so.
Well, you know, unless someone is working in a child-sensitive area, which I believe whether they're... You know, if you are someone that has committed those type of crimes, you definitely have burned the bridge with working with kids anymore. You might as well just accept that. You made the mistake. You did what you did, and that those are part of the consequences. Now, you can live a productive life and do wonderful things and be a wonderful person, but you have burned the bridge with working with children. That's gone. So if you get out of jail and you're looking for a job, and you go apply for a job, and it doesn't say anything about prison on the form, and you're not applying for a job that's child sensitive, I don't think you'd have any trouble getting a job if you were qualified. And especially in this market today, they're hiring anybody. They need to. But then, at the same time, when you're going to get housing, they're going to do a credit check, but they're not going to, you know, delve into that. So. You know, I don't think it's as difficult as... there's a lot of guys that are out there that carry that stigma that are working every day.
You know, I'll tell you two interesting situations that happened recently, because we are heading into a big election year here in Marion, a mayoral election coming up this fall, and we're going to elect a new mayor, whichever way it goes, because our mayor is not running for another term. And it was interesting, because there are two candidates, and they've all been on now, there are two candidates who have, I will say one of the issues with one of them is a religious issue about their religious preference, and the other one is about their sexual preference, let's put it that way, how they have relationships. Now, I asked both of those candidates about those issues because it's not, if I know about it, then other people know about it.
Absolutely.
So if I ask them and they find that offensive or they find it bad that I'm asking that, it's kind of shocking to me because if that's what you are, if that's what you, yeah, why are you offended by it? Why is me asking that hurting you?
I think that a lot of people, you know, when it comes to drug people that have had a drug issue and get out of jail, or people that have had any of those kind of issues, I think it would be in their best interest to find a support group and then to relocate to an area where people don't know you, and you know, if you rotate, go to a place where people don't know you, and then you don't work in those fields, I think that, you know, you can probably get along pretty good. But, you know, as far as the candidate thing, it's interesting you brought that up, because I was thinking about something you asked me, and I want to qualify my response a little better. It was something you asked me a few weeks ago when we were talking, and you said, do you think an atheist could be elected to a local office? And I said, well, sure. And you know, the more I think about that, I think that, yeah, I think that our society's headed that way. We have atheists in federal government. But I think that you really, really have to understand the demographic of where you're running for office and why you would want to go against the grain of your constituents and claim to be representing all of them at the same time. It seems to me that's just a little bit egotistical.
Well, I'll tell you, the thing that popped up this week, similar to the conversation we had, could an atheist be elected? This week it was, could somebody in a same-sex relationship be elected? Because there was a, not from the person, it wasn't from the person who was asked the question, and a matter of fact, the question was not really answered, and, you know, that's fine, people are going to answer the questions the way they want, but it certainly is, has been speculated on in the community. As I always say, if I know about it, I know other people know about it. So on that note, there was some backlash on that would even be asked. You know, are you trying to destroy that person? And I'm thinking, now, wait a second. Now, if that's what you are...
Why would letting it out be destroying you?
Yeah, and it's a question. I'm asking, is that true? I'm giving you the chance to clear it up. So could we elect somebody who had a same-sex relationship, much like the atheist question?
In Marion, you know, I imagine in our current society... We probably could, but once again, I've got to go back to, you have to ask your question of why are you really running? You're first of all, because there's so many people that, because of their conviction, faith conviction, don't believe that's right at all, you're going to have a huge group of people that right off the bat do not support you whatsoever. Whether you're elected or not, you're going to have I told a pastor one time he was going to a church to be voted in as pastor or not, and he said he had been candidating there. And that's the way they do that in a lot of churches, unlike some of the churches are appointed, but most of the churches in this country, you have somebody come, and they'll preach for several weeks. Then the congregation will vote on whether they want it or not. And this guy asked me, he says, Steve, he said, what percentage would you be willing to accept yourself if you're voted? You know, if I'm 75%, should I take it? If I'm 60%? I said, no, you better be 99%. And here's the whole point of that is you don't want to start out anything with a whole huge body of people that are just dead set against you. I mean, dead set against you. Sometimes in our elections, we have people that we would rather this candidate over the other one, or we may be pretty adamant about that. But most of the time, if a candidate is middle of the road, and especially in their social and moral life, represent the mainstream part of our country, mainstream part of our community, most people are going to be okay with them. But if you go into it right off the get-go with some stuff that people are going, you believe that guy's running for office, you're just in for trouble. People are going to be gunning for you the whole time you're there. So once again, I have to ask the question, why are you running?
Well, and the thing about these issues, and I certainly understand the school of thought, what does being an atheist, what does being in a same-sex relationship have to do with how you would govern a city? I understand that argument. I get it. But what I also understand is that these are traits that you developed before you ran for office, and that is what people are going to talk about. They are going to hone in on those issues. So you better either cop to them, or the longer you string it out without answering it, the worse it's going to be.
You know, when I answered the call to ministry a few decades ago now, there had been some issues that I'd had with some people in my younger life, earlier life, that maybe some, disputes or whatnot I'd gotten into. And I knew that before I could serve in a community, that I had to go back to those people, and whether, even if I was in the right and they were in the wrong, I had to clear the air and be apologetic and make sure that we were okay. Because you cannot serve properly and have someone out there that is just constantly looking at something to tear you down with. We certainly don't need to give them the ammunition.
No, and you know, years ago, and I want to say it was Larry King, but before, I don't think people realize that he did not become very well known until he was probably in his 50s. Mm-hmm. And he had worked in local radio down in Florida. And when he got his national radio show, because he had been involved in some things, he had been indicted on, I think, grand larceny it was. It all blew over in the end, but, you know, there was a mugshot of him and those certain things. And when he was going to go national in his 50s, his lawyer came to him and said, listen, there are some things in your past. You've been married quite a few times. That was a big stigma back in those days. Why don't you tell people first? And he wrote a book before he went national, knowing he was going to go national, and told everything. And that way, when somebody asked him about it, he could say, it's in the book. I've told you about it.
Yeah, isn't that great? Don't you wish more people would do that? I'm talking about politicians and everyone. Look, this is going to come out. It's better that I bring it to the surface before you bring it to the surface and then accuse me of trying to hide it.
And, that's it. Get in front of it.
Yeah, get in front of it every time. And I don't think, I really wonder sometimes, once again, is it an ego thing that why you would run for office? You know, you talk, okay, let me just use that thing of atheism, okay? I know going in, if someone is an atheist, that when it comes to their legislation and certain things that may involve faith-based things that are going on, even though they may not be dead against them, they're going to think that they're of lesser importance because of the faith-based side. Most people that are atheists not only claim to be atheists, but they also marginalize the people that aren't, and will usually call them, old traditionalists or people that just believe fables, and they don't have good things to say about them. Well, I don't want somebody in office that's going to do that, and that's not going to have good things to say about me. That's why you would never ever, rarely ever, have a person in a same-sex relationship that's probably going to vote for somebody that they know is dead against that.
You know, the best I can figure out after I thought about that conversation we had about the atheism, and I still think the same thing about the same sex, too. Now, I think that it might be an issue for some people. I certainly do. But I don't think it could be, I don't think it's a big enough constituency to swing an election. I think that if you have two people running for an office, and you hear their ideas on how to run the city, I don't think the group that is not going to vote for you strictly because because you're an atheist could swing it the other way. I just, if you have good ideas, I don't know that it could.
Oh, no, the person's going to vote for you because you are?
Yeah.
I mean, as a positive?
Well, no, I'm saying I don't think if they're voting against you because you are an atheist, if you do think that's a detriment, the person running, I don't think that's a big enough group. If you really are campaigning well, and you really do have good ideas for the city, I don't think that group that is strictly voting against you because of that could swing the election the other way. I don't know that it would be that big a group. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I'd have to, you know, I don't know. I think that you might be surprised. You know, even though a lot of people, some people believe in creation, and some people believe in evolution, some people, they have all the different varying religious thought in this country with different people. But you do know that 90% of the people in our country still today believe in God.
I would say that's right, yeah.
Believe in God, and some of they believe there's a God, and to come out and just boldly say I'm an atheist almost comes across as being very cold, a very cold thought, and I think that I'll be honest with you, I think that the guy that's the atheist is going to catch more flack than the guy that's in a same-sex relationship, because that seems to be so widely accepted in our society today, that I think people are willing to, maybe I'm wrong, but I really do believe that it will be a major issue, and I may be proven wrong, but that's just where I'm at with that.
Well, that it could be, and it really could be, and you know, the funny thing of it is that when it comes to the same-sex relationship, there have been people elected to public office in Marion, Ohio, who were in same-sex relationships. Now, did people know it? Probably not. The majority of the electorate probably did not know it. Now, if you knew them, you would know it, because you would know what was going on. But most people who vote aren't that closely in tuned with every candidate. And if you don't say it, I guess it's not an issue, and they were elected. Now, I go back over time and think about that, and I think, well, are they smart for not saying it? Would it have swung it the other way? I don't know.
I don't know. We our society is just so different. You know, I go back to just, you know, 25 years ago, if it's even, I think it's been that long, I'm not sure. Gary Hart, Monkey Business. You know, I look at Gary Hart. He was a strong candidate for a Democrat ticket, and got caught on the boat with someone that wasn't his wife, and he was done. And today, not so much. You know, I just think that we've really changed a lot. You know, in that perspective.
Well, I guess the big question here is, what we're really talking about is, when it comes to running for office, when it comes to being in the public eye, even if you have good ideas, what is the deal breaker personally? How much should we know about your personal life?
Well, the thing is, even if we know a lot about it, we're probably not going to get it right. Because, you know, there's just things that, you know, there's what's reported, there's what's speculated, and then there's what is. And I doubt that anyone ever gets it all completely right, you know, as far as knowing the candidate. I don't think in our society today that either one of those things are absolute deal breakers with this current society. But what I do think is that it's going to limit their effectiveness. It's going to limit their support, and because of that, that leaves you wide open to other things. And I just don't know that I'd want to go down there.
Well, and that's the big question. I just don't know. Do we hear a lot of ideas in elections anymore, especially on the local level?
We hear a lot of defensiveness and a lot of finger pointing. I mean, really, we do. We hear, and we know that all the all the programs that are being talked about in the elections and the running, they're just blowing smoke. Honestly, they know the most of that stuff they can do. And half the times, if you really look at the fact check, if you can find a factual fact check, how's that sound? You'll find that most of the stuff they're saying is like, no, they can't do this. So, it's hard to see a candidate today and even say, they got some really good ideas, because you don't know if it's anything they even really are going to do.
Well, and that's it. So where do we draw? What is a local issue? We speak so much on national issues.
Let's talk about a local issue. I want to talk about a few. I know of a few. One of the local issues I have today, what I think is truancy. Huge rate of truancy in Marion County. And I understand why. They can't keep up with it. There's so much of it. The schools can't keep up with the truancy. There's so much of it. Another thing that we have to look at, I think, is the dilapidation of some of our properties. That's huge. You can come into a city and see a dump, or you can come into the city and say, boy, this is a really nice place. But I think that's another one. Bringing more economic development into Marion is a very big thing. Those are just three off the top of my head.
But do you think people will talk about those in the upcoming year?
I think they talk about it if the candidate brought them up and stood pretty firm on them and made them an issue. See, the candidate's got to make them an issue first. Because people aren't just going to volunteer and say, hey, why don't you make this your issue? I think they got to say, and then people can relate to that. You start talking about truancy, and then you got every older couple and middle-aged person in town saying, yeah, that's real. Man, I'm glad someone's going to finally get a handle on this, because these kids are running rampant in town during the day, and they're not in school. Or, I sure hate living next door to that horrible dump, and there's no reason for it. Make some programs. That's another thing. When I, years ago, when I was in the construction business, I did some stuff that was a federal grant partnership with the city of Delaware. And they were going out, and people that owned their homes, they had a program where they would put, up to $15,000 in the house. And the people, it was prorated over, they didn't have to pay anything, but over a five-year period, if they sold the house, they had to pay a percentage of it back. After 5 years, they wouldn't. But, it took care of facades, porches, windows, all kinds of stuff. And, how about we work towards some of that stuff? And then we have our ever-increasing drug problem. That's a problem everywhere. That's not just a Marion issue. But believe me, these candidates have plenty of stuff to stand on, to fight for, without walking into it with a big label on their back and saying, look, I'm going to prove to you that I can be this and I can still run. If you have any self-gratification plans in your mind of why you want to be elected, you want to prove a point, or you want to prove that you can do it because of this, that, or the other, setting yourself and the community up for failure.
So what is the best way to handle it if you were being asked a question that had nothing to do with a policy that you might have? How would you handle that?
What I would say, okay, those two issues?
Yeah.
I think I would say, look, here's what you need to understand. I do have a personal life, and explain why you think your personal thoughts or what you believe is what it is, but just say this. I'm here for the people in Marion. I'm here for the people in whatever town it is. I'm here because of these issues, and I want to work on those things, and I don't want this to be, we have too much of that. We know more personally about all of our candidates, even nationally, than we even know about what they're actually doing or what committees they sit on. How ridiculous is that in this country? And it's because, I'll be honest with you, it's the morning news shows, and it's the evening news shows, it's the magazine news magazine mentality, and we know about the personal lives of everyone. You know when they got their last spray tan, when they got if just ridiculous stuff. And you know, why don't we know about the things that are important? Because our news media is putting that out there first. I mean, none of us know anything without the media. Am I right?
That's true.
We don't.
But
we only know what they present.
But should the media ask it? That become.
I mean, to an extent, if it's a really important issue that they think is going to have a profound effect on our country, yeah, I think so. But if they're just fishing for a story, and fishing to be the ones that said it first or that asked it first, and it's going to end up being a detriment to getting anything effectively done. No, I don't think they should. If it's something now, if it's criminal, that's a whole other story.
Well, and that's an interesting point, because I think what most people in the media do, certainly local media, is they are trying to let you clear it up. Because my rule of thumb has always been, if you've said it to other people, then it becomes fair game, because
but why dwell on it?
You don't have to dwell on it.
Why
no.
Does the media want to dwell on it and keep bantering it back and forth?
Well, see, and I think that's where a bad response, because if it, let's say it's asked in an interview, say the atheism question. You ask the atheism question in an interview, and the person answers it, and then their supporters blow up and say, well, how could you ask them that? That's going to hurt them. Why could you? Well, now you're just telling more people, because you're taking what was a one interview question, and you are not mentioning anything else in that interview. You're just harping on the point, and you're telling everybody now about something apparently you didn't want brought out at all.
You know, back to the atheist issue, you know, one thing I know, we only got a few minutes left here. For one, you know, as a Christian believer in Jesus Christ, I believe that you're either a believer in Jesus Christ or you're not. So you can claim to believe in God and not believe anything that you're supposed to, and you're as bad a shape as someone who's an atheist. Me personally, I'm going to pray for an atheist. I think there's going to be atheists that would do wonderful public service and do great things because they're good at what they do. But I think here's where I think they really run into a problem. It's one thing to say, you know, I don't believe in this. People think, man, okay, whatever. You know. But when you are also at the same time someone that constantly bashes people of faith and Christians, that's where you open the can of worms. That's where the media has something to run with.
Well, and I think that at the bottom of, with 2 minutes left here to go, I think at the bottom of this whole thing, here is the problem, is that why are you saying it? Are you saying it because you're advocating that? Are you saying it because you're making fun of other groups? Are you saying it, why do these issues exist, and are they taboos?
What's scary, Scott, is if you're saying it because you have a deep-seated hatred for them.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, I think about the same-sex thing. And I think, now, if I asked a candidate, how long have you been married? And it's a husband and a wife. I don't think that would be considered a salacious question.
No.
But if I ask, are you in a same-sex relationship, or have you been? Now, I guess that is a salacious question.
Right.
I don't really understand the difference, because you choose how you answer. I'm not a lie detector, and I know you don't want to lie, but why would you be? I mean, you live in public. I mean, don't people know this?
Hey, look, if you're running for office, you need to know that your public life is going to be front and center. So like you said, get out ahead of it. But, you know, I'm sure that you know, you would automatically assume that here, and me being pastor of Community Christian Fellowship and my faith, that I do not support same-sex marriage, and I don't. But here's the thing. People that are in those relationships I am as warm and kind to as anyone, and I welcome them to come to church. I'm not out there slamming them and calling them names. And you see the difference?
And there definitely is one.
Hey, we got to go.
It's been a great show today. Thank you, Pastor Whitaker, and we'll be back next Friday at 9:15 a.m.
Hey, are you, hang on the phone a minute when we get off.
Okay, sounds good. All right, and that is that show for this week. Always a lot of fun with Pastor Whitaker, and we will be back in about 15 minutes. Don't you dare go anywhere.
Well, he was surrounded by police officers and reporters. But none of them was looking down. They were all looking up head high. And I saw it. And as soon as I saw that, I was already within 4.